It was gone now, just like that, washed away like a chalk drawing in the rain. Liriana gave a choked sob. Tilla, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
You will be,
Raz replied. He was conscious somehow, back on his feet at the far end of the room. The lower half of his face was a bloody mess, and his nose was bent right in the middle. His right hand held a curved dagger, its razor-sharp tip glinting in the light. All of his sadistic swagger was gone. What was left was murderous rage.
You have no idea how badly you've screwed up. I wasn't going to kill any of you, just make you beg. But now this is an escape attempt. Now I'd be in the right to do whatever I...
He was interrupted by Liriana, who spun toward him with a howl of utter fury, a howl that turned into a guttural, unearthly roar. The walls buckled, the air crackled electric. The smell of copper and wet earth flooded my nose. Liriana's hands were free now, and she jerked them up, and Raz jerked up with them, lifting clean off his feet and up into the air. He hung there, legs twitching, arms locked in place like some kind of ghastly marionette.
You killed him!
Liriana growled. Her eyes were burning a pure gold, the pupils gone entirely. Rivulets of molten light streaked through her hair. The air around her wavered and twisted like hot stone on a summer day.
You killed him! How are you doing this, witch?
Raz rasped out. His eyes were wide, his lip trembling. He was actually scared.
We took your rings!
My rings? Liriana laughed, a cruel, hard laugh that shook the walls and sent dust billowing into the air.
Rings are conduits. They channel magic, focus it, turn willpower into action. Common mages need rings to do anything, but true blood mages like me, we just wear them so people underestimate the power we hold in our hands.
Liriana twisted both hands in a circle, the gesture I knew meant grow.
This power? Witch!
Raz managed to get out, and there was a strange and horrible crackling sound, and his head jerked backward. Thin, black tendrils twisted under his skin, snaking up from his fangs and toward his eyes. Night glass was a living metal after all. That meant it could grow. And Liriana was growing it right into his skull.
My name is not Witch!
Liriana twisted her hands again, and the tendrils shot up farther, burrowing into Raz's head. A few sharp thorns broke the skin, pricking out through his cheeks like saplings through dirt.
I am Liriana Alaria Valeris, Princess of Novaris and heir to the throne. The blood of Titans runs in my veins.
She twisted again, and now I could see the tendrils burrowing up through the whites of Raz's eyes as he gurgled and twitched.
My rings aren't magic.
She clenched both hands into fists, and a massive nightglass tusk burst out the back of Raz's skull.
I'm magic!
Liriana dropped her hands. The burning golden glow faded from her eyes. The air came back into the room with a rush, and Raz's broken corpse fell to the ground, hitting the stone with a metallic clang. We all sat in stunned silence. Even Zell.
You broke your vow,
I whispered at last.
To hell with my vow.
Liriana turned around and walked toward us. She wasn't the terrifying glowing being of heart magic that had killed Raz, but she wasn't herself either. The sweet girl who wouldn't even hurt a Scarling. She never would be again. She knelt down and opened my manacles, then Zell's, then Galen's. Even though my legs didn't want to move, even though I wanted so badly to pretend it wasn't there, I forced myself to walk to Jax's body. There was no pain on his face, just that tiny smile he'd had when he'd gone. I knelt down next to him and pressed my hand to his cheek, which was already going cold, and I ran my palm along his face and closed his eyes. I wanted to hear his laugh. I wanted to see him grin. I wanted him to make a stupid joke or play some dumb game or grabbed me up in one of those big hugs that always made me feel so safe. How could he be dead? How could the world go on without Jax in it? I couldn't move. I couldn't breathe. My chest was collapsing, my breath was ragged, my hands dug into the ground, nails bleeding. The pain I was feeling was worse than anything I'd ever felt, worse than anything I thought I could feel. I didn't even want to escape. I didn't want to live. A firm hand took my shoulder. Zell. He knelt down by my side and wrapped his arms around me and held me firmly, strongly. I turned and buried my face into his shoulder, and he held me as I cried harder than I'd ever cried. Maybe a second passed, maybe an hour. Zell leaned in close, his lips against my ear, and whispered,
"We have to go now. We have to move. We have to live."
I felt a droplet hit my shoulder, and when I looked up, Zell had tears in his eyes, too.
"For Jax."
For Jax. I took a deep breath and wiped the tears from my eyes. I took every ounce of willpower I had, but I took that pain and I shoved it down, deep down, so deep I couldn't feel it. This pain could wait. It had to wait. I took Zell's arm and forced myself to my feet. Galen and Liriana were on the other side of the room. Galen's face was unreadable, in part because it was so mangled, and Liriana's was all rage. I guess that was what she did with her pain.
"We're at the top of the Eastern Keep,"
Galen said.
"Once we're out, I can get us through the servants' quarters to a stockroom that leads to the stables. We can take a back trail and tear down the mountain, and if we're lucky, we'll cut the mages off before they get to the pass."
I looked down at Jax. I looked at his calm face, at his limp hands, at the slick hole in his chest. And I felt a sudden, powerful, all-encompassing certainty. I felt will-struck. "No," I said to Galen, and everyone turned to stare at me. "You can run if you want. But if we all go, we're leaving those 30 sisters of Kaia to be tortured to death. And that's not something I can live with. I'm staying, and I'm fighting."
"Me too,"
Liriana said, and I got the feeling she was relieved I'd spoken first.
"They're my sisters. I'm not going to leave them to die."
Zell just nodded and took my hand. That was enough. Galen's mouth opened and shut wordlessly for a moment.
"I understand. You've been through a lot,"
he said at last.
"But what you're describing is madness. Suicide. I was just down there in the Great Hall. There's at least a dozen Zatochi there, armed to the teeth." "We can take them,"
Zell said.
"We've got the mage on our side. And if you fail..."
"Then we die doing the right thing." I glanced down at Jax. "There's worse fates than that." Galen rubbed the bridge of his nose between two fingers.
"It's not that simple. This isn't just about you or those sisters. Right now we have the element of surprise. If we can warn the mages in time, we can spring a counter-ambush, take out your father's men, and..."
"I don't care," I said, and I felt my hand clench into a fist. Galen and my father were exactly the same, obsessed with this game, with winning, unable to see past their crusades to the damage they were doing. I thought of that statue Jax and I had found in the creek, that forever screaming victim of the last war. Jax had wondered if we were on the right side, but what I was just starting to get was that there was no right side. There were just the people in the castles barking orders and people on the ground getting killed.
"You can't not care,"
Galen insisted.
"Well, I don't. I'm sick of ambushes and counter-ambushes and schemes and plots and all of your bullshit. I don't care who wins the war, because at the rate we're going, there'll be another one tomorrow and another one after that. Here's what I care about. Liriana, Zell, the 30 innocent women chained up in the Great Hall waiting to be slaughtered.
I'll fight for them, and that's it. Galen stood there speechless. I could see the gears in his head whirring as he tried to figure out how to change my mind, and I could see the moment when he realized he couldn't.
Titan's breath, he cursed. You're a lunatic, just like your father, and you're going to get me killed.
You'll fight with us? Liriana asked. Galen sighed.
You're the princess of Novaris. I can't well just let you die, can I? Yes, I'll fight with you. And if your father asks, your bastard friends forced me to do it at knife point.
That was my next plan, I said, and turned toward the tower's door. A part of me wanted to kneel back down and touch Jax again, to kiss his cold face one last time. But I knew if I did, it might give the pain strength, might test this resolve. Right now, this resolve was the only thing I had. I had to leave him here. I had to say goodbye. I cracked my knuckles. Let's go. Zell took the guards outside the door just as easily as he'd predicted, dropping one with a nightglass jab and the other with a chokehold. We armed ourselves with what they were carrying. Zell took a sword and sheath, slinging it across his back, and Galen and I each took a dagger. Liriana didn't pick any weapons up. Not that she needed any. Hell, as it turned out, she didn't even need her rings. I had a library's worth of questions about that, but they would have to wait. For now, I was just grateful to have her on my side. We made our way down the tower, creeping along a winding staircase. I'd worried we'd have to fight our way through an army of guards, but the place was emptier than it had been when we'd been hiding out here. Most of my father's men were probably at Pioneer's Pass, preparing their ambush. Was Miles still here? I wondered. Holed up in his room, or had he ridden out after his little tantrum? Just thinking about him got me seeing red. It was his fault all this had happened. It was his fault Jax was dead. And if I saw him again, I'd... Zell reached out and pressed his hand lightly against the small of my back.
Stay calm, he said without saying it. Stay focused.
I did. We made our way around a corner to the heavy wooden double doors that led to the Great Hall. They were shut, but I could hear sounds through them. Padding footsteps, the clink and clank of metal, the crackle of flame, and a choked, weak sound that might have been a muffled scream. I looked around, at Zell and Galen and Liriana. Met their eyes, made sure they all looked ready. Zell and Galen drew their blades. I reached down, wrapped my hand around the hilt of my dagger. Let's do this, I said. Zell threw open the doors. Chapter 27 The first thing I saw was a sister. She was young, maybe a little older than me, and without her veil I could make out smooth brown skin and a shaved head. She sat strapped to a chair with several tight leather bands, a knotted rope wrapped around her mouth as a gag. Her arms were outstretched, clamped to the chair's armrests, and the rings on her fingers were pulsing hot with magical energy, flickering stormy purple and sizzling red, just like that fragment in the Mage Killer I'd seen back at White Sand Beach. Her chest was ripped up with long, horizontal cuts, and several fresh burns glistened on her bare shoulders. But what really caught my gaze were her eyes. They were wide and vacant, all white, like they'd been permanently rolled up into her head. The mind-breaking drug in action. It was way more horrible than I'd imagined, and I'd imagined it pretty damn horrible. One of Raz's mercenaries stood next to her, an older man with white hair and heavy jowls. He held a poker in one hand, its tip glowing red. Behind him, throughout the hall, were at least 10 other mercenaries, sharpening weapons and drinking wine out of big clay jugs. The long tables had been stripped of food and were covered in knives, axes, and other sharp, pointy things, as if you'd get bored torturing with just one. At the hall's far end, by the open doors to the courtyard, I could make out the rest of the sisters, or what was left of them. 15 women, maybe 20, sat on their knees, arms bound behind their backs, gags in their mouths.
They looked up in astonishment at the sight of us. The mercenaries looked up, too, though it wasn't astonishment on their faces. They bolted out of their seats as we entered, fumbling for their weapons. The older one torturing the sister, his beard stained purple from wine, actually dropped his poker in surprise. I decided I'd go for him first.
Impressive!
A voice boomed across the hall. A hulking figure stepped into the hall from the courtyard, standing two heads taller than any man there. He was shirtless, and his tattooed pecs were bigger than my head. Each massive hand held an enormous axe, their night-glass blades sharpened to a razor tip. Gresigol, the chief of clans, Zell's father. Of course he was here, because my luck couldn't get any worse, right? Greza didn't look drunk, unlike the others, but he'd probably have to drink a barrel of wine just to get a buzz. He looked right past me and glowered at Zell.
"Have you finally decided to face me, boy?"
he demanded. Zell strode forward and leveled his sword at his father.
"Drop your axes, surrender, and we'll let you live."
Greza laughed, a thunderous boom.
"I'll admit this, bastard. You don't give up. If only you had some balls to back it up, maybe you'd be..." "Raz is dead," Zell said coldly. "You're running out of sons."
Greza stopped, stunned. Then he let out a bellow that shook the walls and charged forward, and the room exploded into violence. Greza crossed the room in 10 gigantic strides and swung his axes down in vertical arcs like he was hammering a giant nail into the earth. Zell jerked back, just barely dodging the attack, and the axes hit the ground with a shower of sparks. Greza had the upper hand. Zell would have to get close enough to use his sword, and he couldn't do that when his father had twice the range. I wanted to rush forward to help him, but then the other mercenaries charged at us. I wasn't scared. Maybe I should have been, but I wasn't. Sure, these were trained killers, and they outnumbered us 12-4, but I had Zell's training. I had Galen and Lyriana at my back, and I really, really wanted to hurt someone. The princess jerked her hand up, shooting a gust of lift that knocked two of the mercenaries off their feet and sent them sprawling out on the stone. Another tried to rush her with his sword, but Lyriana flipped her hand over, lifted a table off the ground, and smashed it down on him in an explosive spray of splinters. The sisters screamed. The mercenary went down. I didn't think he was getting back up. A third rushed at Galen, swinging a heavy two-handed blade. The Lord of the Nest dodged it effortlessly, wove around behind him and stabbed him in the back over and over again in a dizzying, bloody fury. I was distracted from that horrible sight by a drunken holler. The older mercenary with the heavy jowls came charging at me and swung a hand axe at my throat in a clumsy swipe. My brain shut down. My body took over. I threw myself back, and his hand axe's chipped blade cut through the air in front of me. He stumbled forward. I whipped my dagger up. I'd been aiming for his chest, I think, but I ended up driving it up to the hilt into the meaty part of his bicep. The mercenary let out a yelp of pain, his breath reeking of booze. His hand axe flew harmlessly across the room. He staggered forward, my dagger still in his arm, and I wove around him, pressed both hands to the back of his head, and jumped up, putting all my weight on his neck. This wasn't some graceful Kelzon move, more like a clumsy grapple you'd seen in a barroom brawl. But it worked. The mercenary fell forward and hit the sharp corner of a table with his chin. There was an audible crack from his neck, and he crumpled to the ground and lay still. I didn't even have a moment to breathe, because another mercenary was coming at me, a short, husky one with a braided beard. He had a long sword with a subtle curve, like Zell's way back at the feast. He sliced it down at me in a blindingly fast chop. I jerked to the side, just barely, the blade's polished edge scraping the skin off the side of my arm, and then I swung forward, spun around, and hit the mercenary in the back of the head with my elbow. That was a Kelzon move. Executed flawlessly, if I could give myself credit. The mercenary crumpled to the ground, his blade sliding out of his hands. He tried to get up, but I smashed the heel of my boot into his face. He didn't try to get up again. I took a quick survey of the room. Most of the enemies were down. Galen was in the corner, choking a scrawny mercenary with his knee on the man's neck. Lyriana was holding her own against the remaining three, hurling chairs at them with her magic as they cowered behind a doorway. Zell and Grezza were fighting toward the chamber's entryway. Grezza was still on the offensive, driving Zell farther and farther back. Zell was faster, rolling and dodging his father's strikes, but Grezza was too big and too strong. His broad swings with his axes kept Zell a good yard away, rendering his sword useless. Zell looked desperate, his face slick and his breath fast, but Grezza hadn't even broken a sweat. He was taking his time. All he had to do was get in one hit. Footsteps pounded toward them. Galen had knocked out his mercenary and was running Zell's way, a dagger in his hand and a clear shot at Grezza's back. While Zell held his father's attention, Galen bounded across the room, leaped onto a bench, onto a table, and then dove at Grezza, knife held high. But it was like Grezza had eyes in the back of his head. He spun around in a wide arc and hit Galen in midair with the back of his axe. Galen flew across the room like a doll, hit the wall, and crumpled. I started to run toward him when Lyriana screamed.
Tilla, look out!
I spun around. One of Lyriana's mercenaries had broken away and was rushing at me. It was Pretty Boy from the alley in Bridgetown, with a bandage on his nose and a furious scowl. His hand darted up from his belt. Something streaked through the air at my face, something glinting and metal and sharp. A throwing knife. My hand shot up on pure reflex and caught it by the polished metal hilt, stopping it an inch from my face. Just like the rock, Pretty Boy froze, stunned, and he looked as surprised as I felt. Still not thinking, I hurled the knife back. My throw was a lot less graceful, a wobbly, horizontal spin, but it did the job. The edge of the knife clipped his throat as it passed by. A thin stream of blood shot out like wine out of a punctured skin. The mercenary grabbed his throat with a gurgle and fell to his knees. I let out a wild cry and rushed toward him and grabbed a weapon off the table, a heavy wooden club with night glass teeth embedded in the head. Pretty Boy looked up at me, and I swung the club in a wide arc that caught him right in the face. I heard bone shatter and flesh tear. He toppled onto his back and lay there. I don't know if I killed him, but he sure as hell wasn't pretty anymore. I turned around. Lyriana had handled her last mercenary, ripping the door off its hinges and smashing him to the ground with it. The sisters were watching her in stunned disbelief, and Archmatron Marlena, who I was happy to see was still alive, had a look that seemed somewhere in between admiration and disgust. I didn't care, though, because in the room's entryway, Zell and Grezza were still fighting, and it was somehow even worse than when I'd last looked. Grezza had lost one of his axes, but Zell had lost his only sword and was bleeding from a cut in his side. His father kept driving him back with wild swings, but there was only so far Zell could go before he hit the hallway wall. He was unarmed and wounded and trapped. Then I saw his face, and I recognized the look. It was the look he'd had before saving me from Tannen, the look he'd had taking out the Scarlings, the look he'd had throwing that knife in Bridgetown. It wasn't just determination. It was certainty. He gritted his teeth and sprinted forward, rushing right at his father. Grezza growled and swung his axe down over his shoulder, like a massive bladed windmill plunging right at Zell's head. I cringed, but right before the blade could hit, Zell swerved in his sprint and jumped to the side, running for three whole strides along the wall itself. Grezza's axe smashed into the ground, and Zell lunged off the wall in an amazingly high leap, as high up as Grezza was tall. Grezza tried to react, but he was too slow, and his axe was too heavy. Zell planted one hand on his father's shoulder, flipped over his head, and landed perfectly behind him. Then he threw out a dozen blindingly fast punches, each one driving the full length of his night-glass blades into his father's back, up and down the length of his spine. Grezza let out a wheezing rasp and collapsed to his knees. His axe clattered to the floor. He sat there like that, rigid as stone. His fingertips twitched, but his arms didn't move, dead weight hanging off his shoulders. His massive chest heaved with breath, but he didn't get up and didn't fall down. The thick, veiny muscles in his neck twitched, but his head was still. It was as if he'd been frozen. Zell hadn't just beaten him. He'd paralyzed him. Zell staggered away, panting, as if the reality of the fight had just hit him. The room was still and silent, except for the broken moaning of a few wounded mercenaries. Along the far wall, Galen pulled himself up into a slump and watched with great interest as Zell circled Grezza. A grimace of blinding pain crossed the Zatochi chief's face, but then it twisted into, unbelievably, a smile.
I underestimated you, son,
Grezza choked out, each syllable a labor.
That was my folly. You had a lot of follies.
Zell knelt down and grabbed his father's axe, lifting it up with both hands. He rested the tip of the blade against the base of Grezza's neck.
Underestimating me was the least of them.
Grezza didn't seem remotely fazed.
It is a father's greatest gift to see his son surpass him. When we meet again in the halls of Zelaran, I shall treat you better.
He closed his eyes.
And this.
Zell breathed hard. I could see so much hatred in his eyes. I could see that killer's rage. So much fury. So much pain. But still, he held the axe straight and didn't swing it.
Do it!
Grezza barked.
Don't you dare leave me like this. Broken. Dishonored!
Zell looked up at me, and I could see it now in his eyes. Behind the fury and the pain, the kindness he couldn't suppress, the mercy that had spared his brother, the compassion that had driven him to protect us all this time. I didn't say anything, but I didn't have to. Zell looked at me and nodded.
Being dishonored was the best thing that ever happened to me.
He flipped the axe around so the wooden handle was against his father's neck.
You give it a shot.
Then he swung it in a hard arc that cracked Grezza in the back of the head and sent him sprawling, unconscious, onto the chamber's floor. I let out a long exhale. The sisters looked relieved, too. Zell dropped the axe to the floor and looked around, nodding in approval.
Nice moves.
I learned from the best, I smiled. How are you holding up? Zell glanced down at his father's sprawled form.
Good, he said. Surprisingly good.
Then he collapsed onto the floor. I crossed the room faster than I've ever moved in my life and dropped down to him. With both hands, I propped him up and eased him against a wall, and my palms came back soaked red.
Oh, no!
I gasped and pulled open his shirt, seeing for the first time just how bad the cut in his side was. A jagged rift from his rib cage to just above his hip. Blood. Too much blood was trickling out, running all the way down his side. I pressed my hands to the wound, desperately trying to keep his life in.
It's okay,
he choked out, even as the color was draining from his sweat-slick face. He tried to force a smile, but he just ended up with a grimace.
I've had worse.
This wound isn't fatal, a woman's voice said from above me. I looked up to see the wizened face of Archmatron Marlena peering over my shoulder. Lyriana must have freed her.
The sisters can mend this. If we can work our magic, he'll live.
She gently pushed me aside and hovered over Zell, laying a strip of cloth from a nearby table onto his wound.
Of course he'll live, I said, in part because I couldn't even begin to fathom a world where Zell died, too. You can save him.
I'll be fine,
Zell repeated, his eyes locked onto mine.
Don't worry. We'll make it through this.
His breath got more ragged and he struggled to keep his head up.
We'll...
Shh, Archmatron Marlena whispered, and eased his head back as he passed out. I clenched my hand over my mouth and turned away. I'd never been religious, never believed in any of it, but in that second, I prayed to the Titans and the Old Kings and anyone else who would listen, prayed to hell that the Archmatron knew what she was doing.
We need to get to safety, Lyriana said. Now!
Oh. Right. The Zatochi were down, but we were still ass-deep in enemy territory.
Yeah. We need to move.
I turned to Galen.
Time to go for your escape route. Can you help carry Zell?
He rubbed at his side where Grezza had hit him.
Pretty sure I've got a broken rib. Or three.
I can lift most of his weight if you can guide him, Lyriana said. Her eyes flitted to one of the shattered tables in the room, the one crushing two Zatochi mercenaries. Believe me, I can still lift. By the door to the courtyard, Lyriana was freeing the other sisters one by one. I'll give them this. I thought they might be shell-shocked or rattled. But the second they were free, each one moved with a purpose, rushing to Marlena's side, tending to Zell. A few were even ministering to the wounded Zatochi. Lyriana probably thought that was noble. I thought it was a waste of effort. The sister in the chair, the one with the terrible white eyes, must have died during the fight. One of the others gently eased her out of her seat and laid her on the ground, draping a tablecloth over her prone form as she whispered the cant of departure. Our rings, Archmatron Marlena said, gesturing toward a table along the wall without looking up. Get the rest of our rings. On it, I said and ran over. Sure enough, there they were on a small round table, a pile of rings stacked up like treasures in a storybook, shimmering green and blue and turquoise like the surface of a rushing creek. I realized as I got to the table that I had no idea how they actually worked. Did certain rings go to certain mages, or could they just sort of trade them around? And what the frozen hell had Lyriana meant back in the tower when she'd said that true blood mages didn't even need them? A flicker caught my eye, from just by the table side. A thick cloth sack lay there, and inside, something was pulsing and flickering. My stomach tightened and the hairs on my neck stood on end. These were the other rings, the ones from the sisters the Zatochi had already tortured, the ones they were going to turn into mage killers. My hand shook a little as I pried open the sack to look inside. There were at least 2 dozen rings. While the ones on the table glowed solid colors, these changed and turned, the light inside them throbbing and twisting like trapped lightning storms. Just looking at them felt wrong. Dangerous.
Halt!
A man's voice screamed. Not one of ours. I jerked up, shocked, and through the hall's open door I saw pretty much the worst possible thing I could imagine. 12 men. Kent men were racing toward us across the courtyard, crossbows in hand, and leveled our way. They must have heard the commotion and come running. Leading them, with an expression somewhere between stunned and outraged, was my father. That was the second time today he'd surprised me on that courtyard, and this time he looked a lot less inclined to save my life. Lyriana acted first and quickly. She threw up her hands and the doors to the courtyard swung shut with a heavy thud. Not a moment too soon. I heard crossbows twang and the doors shook with the impact of their bolts. Lyriana flicked her hands again and again, hurling the hall's 2 remaining big tables across the room. They slammed against the doors, frames cracking, but made a halfway decent barricade. Not good enough.
We have to go, Lyriana said. They'll break through that in a minute.
She turned to Galen.
Lord Reza, can you get us to the stables?
Galen knelt down, looping an arm under Zell's and lifting him to his feet. Zell's face was pale, his eyes lidded. I couldn't bear to look at him.
Yes,
Galen grunted.
Yes, I think so, but...
He was cut off by thundering footsteps. On the other side of the doors, I heard the shouting of men, the banging of fists, and then the crunch of blades on wood.
Shit,
Galen hissed.
They're going to break through that in a second. We're not going to make it in time.
I knew he was right. 15 stunned sisters, Zell barely conscious, Galen limping. There was no way we'd be able to run and get seated and riding, not before my father and his men caught up with us. The sound of hacking got louder and louder. The doors buckled and trembled. I felt fear. And then I felt it again. The same thing I'd felt back in the tower when I'd committed to save the sisters in the first place. That certainty, that strength, that resolve. I knew exactly what I had to do. We hadn't come this far just to give up now. Jax hadn't died for that.
You all go, I said.
And okay, even I was kind of surprised at how calm I sounded. I'll stay and hold them off.
What?
Lyriana gaped.
No, we're not leaving you.
You have to, I said. Look, I know my father. I know how to stall him. I wasn't sure my plan would work. Didn't even know if it was likely, but I had to try.
Go. Get the sisters to safety. Make this worth it. Make this count.
She stared at me, her eyes glistening, and a single golden tear streaked down her cheek like a shooting star. I could tell she knew what I was thinking and was trying to find a way to talk me out of it. So I grabbed her in a hug instead and held her close.
Go,
I whispered.
Go.
She nodded and pulled away, sniffling.
Thank you, Tilla, for everything.
She turned to Archmatron Marlena, who was slipping her rings back onto her fingers.
Lead the sisters out the northern door. We need to move.
The doors to the courtyard trembled as the first blade cut through them, a glistening axe head smashing through with a spray of splinters. The sisters rushed out, led by Archmatron Marlena. The last to go was Lyriana, who was twirling her hands delicately to keep a lift going, raising Zell's prone form just enough so that Galen could ease them onto his shoulder.
Tila,
he moaned, so softly I could barely hear him. He was hanging on to the ragged edge of consciousness, too weak to do anything but whisper.
No.
The doors buckled now. Dozens of axe heads had chopped through them. They'd be down any second.
It's okay,
I told Zell, even though he probably wasn't awake enough to hear me.
Tua,
he rasped. I leaned forward and ran my hand along his way too cold cheek.
You've protected me this whole journey, I whispered. Now it's my turn to protect you.
Then I leaned in and kissed him, and I felt his lips and his breath and his skin against mine. And now it took every ounce of strength I had to break it off, like I was ripping away my own skin.
We'll meet again, I said. And when we do, I'm never leaving your side.
Zell was too weak to respond, too weak to even open his eyes. I was grateful for that. Galen shot me a quick nod, and then turned across the room, hurrying after the sisters with Zell slumped over his shoulder and Lyriana trailing after. They rushed out the back doors to the servants' quarters and the passage to the stables. To freedom. Alone in the hall, I fought back my tears and choked down my fear. I balled my hands into fists. I needed anger now. I needed grit. The doors to the courtyard finally shattered, collapsing in with a decisive burst and knocking away the tables. I sprinted forward across the room even as my father's men rushed in, crossbows leveled at me, and I dove for the table with the mage killers even as a few crossbows twanged. I hit the ground in a roll and the bolts whizzed over me, collided harmlessly with the wall, and I was right where I wanted to be. My father threw up his hand, stopping his men, maybe because he wanted to spare me, maybe because he wanted to see what I was doing. Right then, I didn't care. I stood up to face the mob of soldiers and I held out my hand, and my palm burned with the impossible, sizzling heat of a trapped mage's power. One of the rings from the bag, a big, shiny crimson one, hung in my outstretched fist, its dancing light streaking out from my fingers like sunlight through a row of trees. The men recoiled, startled, as if I were holding a fire-breathing dragon. Even my father looked surprised.
Yeah, I grinned. That's right. Put your weapons down now, or I blow us all to hell.
Chapter 28. My father's men looked back and forth at one another and then at him, desperately hoping for an order. But he didn't give one. He just stared at me through his narrow eyes. My eyes. Analyzing. Considering. It was like he was seeing me for the first time.
Well, aren't you a brave little bastard? A cold female voice said.
Lady Robin Hampstead pushed her way forward from the back of the crowd, and her scowl was so hateful it had its own scowl. Miles walked behind her, pale, speechless, looking way less confident than he had back in the tower. I shot him a glare that would have made a titan tremble.
You can threaten all you want, but you can't actually hurt us, Lady Hampstead said.
That's just a tainted ring without a shell. Without a spark, you won't be able to set it off. I wasn't a scientific genius like her, but even I knew she was full of shit. This ring in my hand radiated power, pulsed with it. It was scorching hot and freezing cold at the same time. I felt its energy run through my whole body, like I'd kissed a lightning bolt. My vision throbbed, my bones hummed. A voice whispered in my brain, soft and seductive, in a language I couldn't understand. There was so much power in this ring, desperate to break free, straining against the gem that trapped it. The case and the spark might have made it a convenient weapon, but they weren't necessary. One good crack and this thing would go boom.
"You sure about that, Robin?"
I shouted back.
"Why don't I throw it at your face and we'll test it out?"
Lady Hampstead actually growled. She ripped a crossbow out of the hands of the baffled soldier next to her and aimed it directly at my face.
"How about we do a different test? I'm a crack shot, you know, and you'll have an awful hard time throwing with a bolt through your eye. What do you think is faster, your arm or my finger?"
"Don't shoot her, mother,"
Miles begged, and I decided I'd throw it at him instead.
"You promised you wouldn't hurt her."
That was when she was locked safely in a dungeon. Lady Hampstead squinted one eye. Was she actually enjoying this?
Not threatening me with a mage killer.
"Please, don't shoot her."
"No one's shooting anyone,"
my father said sternly, like an adult finally tiring of the children's bickering. Every head in the room turned to his, every head except Lady Hampstead's, which remained as aimed at me as her crossbow.
"I mean it, Robin. Don't pull that trigger."
She shot my father an annoyed look, but nodded. She knew better than to talk back to him. She released her finger off the crossbow's trigger, but kept it pointed at me.
"If she makes a move, I'll shoot."
"She won't,"
my father said. He took a step forward, and even in the dim moonlight, his eyes were burning right through me.
"Will you, Talandra?"
"I don't know,"
I shouted back, and I was trying to make it sound tough, but I honestly didn't know. My brilliant plan had been, step one, threaten them with a ring. Step two, figure out step two. All I could really do was stall for time. My father knew that.
"Come on, Talandra. Put the ring down."
I thought he'd be angry, but his voice was soft and kind, the voice he'd used when I was a little girl to comfort me over a skinned knee.
"I'm amazed you made it this far. Really, truly amazed. But this is over. There's no stopping progress. All that's left is to stand by my side and join me as I return glory and freedom to the West."
Join him? Stand at his side? I shook my head.
"It's too late."
"Of course it's not."
He took a step forward.
"We still have more than enough time to round up your friends and finish making the rest of the bombs. And then, picture it. Picture it. The mages will hasten through Pioneer's Pass tomorrow night. I have 100 archers hidden in the mountains, each with a mage killer on the end of his arrow. The mages stop at a checkpoint at the pass's narrowest point, none the wiser, and then..."
My father raised one hand and snapped his long fingers.
"It'll be over in a heartbeat. The Knights of Lazan, the best and brightest of the warrior mages, wiped out. The Valeris dynasty's reign of terror will be over. The era of mages will die out in one thunderous burst."
The corners of his mouth twitched, hinting at a smile.
"And the West will be a free kingdom once more."
I wasn't smiling. A month ago, I couldn't have fathomed the idea of talking back to my father. But now I couldn't hold back.
"You make it sound so good, so important. But what you're really talking about is murder. The murder of hundreds of people."
Lady Hampstead rolled her eyes.
"Be still, my bleeding heart."
My father shot her a glare that could melt stone.
"They are not people, Talandra. They're mages, knights of Lasan, brutal killers, every last one. Do you know how they learn their craft at that sickening academy in Lightspire? By practicing on prisoners, half of whom are innocent to begin with. They turn men inside out, boil their blood within them, melt their brains so all that's left is a drooling husk.
He shook his head.
Those are not people. They're monsters, and they need to be stopped.
I thought of that boy in the creek, the screaming statue. And then I thought of the sister in the chair, the one with the hollow, glassy eyes, the one lying under a cloth just a few feet away from me. It's not just the mages, I said. What about all the innocent people who'll get caught in the crossfire of the war? What about the sisters you plan to torture to death? What about the people who've already been killed?
Wars have casualties, he said.
You started this war, I yelled back. Maybe we weren't free before, but we had peace. Wasn't that good enough?
Peace, my father sneered. This isn't peace. This is oppression. This is bending down to lick the boots of the men who beat you. You want to talk about innocents killed? Do you know what the mages did in the Great War? Have you heard what happened at Orstulk and New Kendalltown? Can you imagine an entire village murdered, their flayed corpses mounted on the roofs of their homes?
His eyes burned with righteous passion.
Do you know what they did to my grandfather?
No, I whispered. That seemed to shake him. His hard expression softened, and a look I'd never seen before crossed his face.
No,
he repeated quietly and stepped back.
No, you wouldn't, because I never told you.
Never told me what? What the hell did they do to his grandfather? What was happening here? My father, he of the penetrating stare, actually looked down, ashamed.
I've made many mistakes, Talandra. There is so much I've done wrong. But there is nothing I regret more than how I treated you. Everything that's happened to you, all of it, is because of my failure as a father.
My mouth went dry, and I felt my hand start to tremble. Even the ring's power felt distant, diminished. This had to be a ruse, right? But how? Why? What are you talking about?
When I came of age, my father took me into his study and he told me his great secret. On the day of surrender, the Kents had yielded to the Valeris in name but not in spirit. Albion Kent had made a promise that was passed to my grandfather, to my father, to me. A promise to be vigilant, to be dedicated, to watch for the moment when the Valeris were weak and then strike.
My father's voice was distant, reverent.
I made that promise. I swore I would restore our kingdom. I spent 2 decades planning our revenge. Everything I've done in the last 20 years, every choice I've made, was to bring us to this day.
Every choice, I whispered back, and suddenly this was very, very personal. What about ignoring me the second you married Lady Evelyn? Was that for your revenge as well?
Yes, of course, yes,
he replied, and I couldn't believe the emotion I was hearing.
I loved your mother, Talandra. I might have thrown it all away for her if she hadn't died. And you remind me so much of her. Just looking at you makes my heart ache.
I had no idea my father was even capable of talking like this. Had he bottled it away so deeply for decades? Was this who he really was?
In another life, I might have just raised you as my real daughter from the start. Politics be damned. But I couldn't. I needed House Yearnwood's loyalty. And that could only be bought through marriage, through legitimate heirs. I had to do it, and I had to distance myself from you, lest it cast our alliance into doubt. It killed me inside to do it, but I had to.
And there it was. The words I'd spent almost my entire life dreaming of hearing. The answer I'd so badly hoped for but never really dared to think could be true. Out in the open just like that. I wanted to be skeptical, to not let it distract me, to focus on the mage killer in my hand and the crossbow pointed at my face. But I couldn't. There was just too much weight in his words.
"Why didn't you say something?"
I demanded, and tears stung my eyes.
"Fine. You couldn't legitimize me. But you could have told me about your promise. You could have brought me in. You could have let me know."
"I didn't trust you,"
my father admitted without a moment's hesitation.
"I thought you were still a child. I thought you wouldn't understand. That you'd slip up and compromise my plan. I thought I could just wait until the mages were dead, and then I could bring you in. I didn't think you needed to know. I was so wrong."
Then he looked up at me, eyes shining with pride.
"I wish I had, Talandra. I wish I'd brought you into my study and told you what my father had told me. Had I known what you were capable of, I would have. You fought for what you believed in, even when it meant defying your own house. You traveled through the entire province, even with those Itochi mercenaries on your heels. Even now, you somehow broke out of the tower, and what did you do? Did you run for your life? No. You marched straight into the heart of danger itself, because you have a bold heart and the iron will of a true Kent, straight from the line of the old kings. I only wish I had given you the upbringing that would have had you fighting by my side. I can only imagine what we could have accomplished."
"You're proud of me? Because I defied you?"
"Yes. There's no greater courage than defying your own father, than defying your king. In its way, your rebellion was just as courageous as my own. That's why I'm proud."
"It's a trap," my brain screamed. "He's manipulating you. He's just saying what you want to hear." But my heart refused to listen.
"You ordered me dead. You sent mercenaries after me."
"And it was the most painful decision I've ever made,"
my father said.
"But I had no choice. This is about more than you, more than me. Tonight is about the freedom and future of every citizen of the West. No one life can outweigh that. Not even yours."
He stepped toward me.
"But the old kings have smiled on us and given us a second chance. You don't have to die, and you don't have to run. Tonight, the world changes, and tomorrow you can join me, by my side, as you always should have been. Tomorrow we can live the life we were always meant to."
He smiled. He actually smiled. Not a smirk or a hint, but a full, genuine, earnest smile. A smile I'd wanted to see my entire life.
"Talandra Kent, you're my true daughter. And one day, you will rule all these lands as the rightful queen of the West."
It felt like I was being swallowed by an endless sea, sinking into a massive, thundering whirlpool. I sucked in my breath and closed my eyes. I wanted to believe it. I wanted to feel it. I wanted so badly to picture that future, to picture him finally embracing me as a daughter, to going home again, to being a queen, to living that life, that dream. I wanted to see it. But I couldn't. Because all I could see was Archmagus Roland gurgling in the sand as my father's dagger plunged into his eye. Marcos and Tannen, their corpses turning blue on the floor of their villa. That family, murdered in the cottage, bodies strewn around like they were nothing. And that watchman in Bridgetown, just doing his job before getting a knife to the skull. That sister in the chair, eyes glassy, streaked with blood. All I could see was Jax. Jax, who would never matter. Jax, who my father would never see his family. Jax, whom my father would have killed in a heartbeat. Jax, who lay dead because of my father's war. And he wanted me to be Queen of the West? I looked up at my father and met his eyes. "Sorry, Lord Kent," I said. "But I'm just a bastard." I threw the ring as hard as I could. Not at my father, not at Lady Hampstead, but between us, at the floor of the Great Hall. Many things happened at once.
"No!"
my father screamed. His men dove and scattered. Lady Hampstead fired her crossbow. The ring whistled through the air, spinning, spiraling, casting that terrible crimson light in all directions. And then it hit right where I'd been aiming, dead center on the wide hexagonal tile. The explosion was deafening, a thunderous boom and a burst of red flame that scorched the walls and sent sizzling shards of ore flying in all directions. I heard screams as they struck my father's men, but I didn't even have time to process it, because the floor of the Great Hall shuddered and shattered, collapsing inward in a gaping maw of a sinkhole. We all fell together, in a shower of brick and dirt, down into the darkness of the tunnels. I hit the ground, but not as hard as my father and his men who hadn't expected it. We were in the wide chamber below the Great Hall, the one that connected all the tunnels. I couldn't see my father or his men through the thick, billowing cloud of dust between us, but I could hear them, shouting, coughing, drawing blades. I had a moment, just a tiny, tiny moment before they realized what had happened, and I wasn't going to waste it. I sprang to my feet and reached for the sack that had been lying next to me, the one with all the other tainted rings.
"Stop her!"
my father bellowed, but they couldn't see me, couldn't tell where I was going. I sprinted as hard as I could, ignoring the pain in my arm, ignoring the voice in my head that knew I was almost certainly about to die. The tunnels should have been pitch black, but the sack illuminated my way, cutting through the darkness with a blinding rainbow of pulsing reds and blues and greens. That wasn't a good thing. The other rings must have been jostled in the fall, because the sack rumbled with their energy. I could feel it shuddering, hear the cracking of gems like panes of glass. I sprinted even harder through the narrow eastern tunnel, and then I was out in the fresh night air, under the stars, on that narrow rocky platform overlooking the sheer cliffs. A cold wind blew over me. The moon overhead was full and bright. Even as the sack in my hands started to burn, even as I heard my father scream behind me, I had a sudden moment of utter calm. I saw myself and Jax on the platform's edge, just one night ago, sitting together in loving silence one last time. I smiled and wound my arm up and hurled the sack as hard as I could. It hurtled out of my hand, over the ledge, down into the abyss below. I watched in wonder as it ripped open mid-air and all the rings went flying, like a multicolored starscape shining out across the night. And then they blew up. I heard a boom so loud I felt it in my bones. I heard ice snap and flame roar. I heard voices scream. I heard stone crumble. I saw an enormous fireball that was every single color at once blast out, tearing through the mountains, lighting up the night sky brighter than the sun. In that fireball, I saw crystal shards and rivulets of lava and dancing bands of emerald light. I felt myself lift off my feet and fly backward away from the ledge, into the tunnels and smash incredibly hard into a stone wall. I felt my bones break and blood flood my mouth. And then I felt nothing. Chapter 29. Smoke was stinging my eyes and burning my throat. I coughed and winced, blinking away tears. I was lying on a pile of sharp, jagged stones. I couldn't tell what the hell I was looking at first, and I realized it was the ceiling of the Great Hall, as seen from the tunnels through the hole where the floor used to be. The blast must have thrown me all the way back into the wide chamber. That wasn't the only damage it had done. Big chunks of the Great Hall's ceiling were missing, having caved in from the blast. Tiny fires smoldered all around. Huge piles of broken stones lay around me, and underneath a few, I could make out the broken forms of crushed men. My father's men. I tried to crane my head to look at them.